With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
And Bianca, how does my voice sound? Am I sounding okay?
You're sounding loud and clear.
Beautiful. And how do you say your last name? Is it Stichter?
Stichter, yes.
Beautiful.
In okay. Dutch, it's Stichter, but that's too difficult.
Right.
So don't bother.
Thank you for that. Hey, Jared, are you there?
I'm here.
Hi.
Excellent.
Hello. I'm going to leave you guys to it in just a second, but just wanted to check in and make sure everyone got set up and everything was good to go.
Beautiful. And Jared, so we've got around 20 minutes or so, Jared?
Yes, that'd be great.
Yeah. Okay. And if we do go a little over that, that's all right with you?
That a little over would be okay.
Yeah. Sometimes when you're in the middle of that last question, it's always a little challenging, but that's awesome. Okay, Jared, thank you for all this. And we'll talk shortly.
Sounds great. Enjoy.
Thank you. Okay, Bianca, we're recording. So, hey, is there anything you don't want to talk about?
Not really.
Okay, I just want you to feel super comfortable.
Okay.
All right, well, give me one sec here. I'm going to bring us in with a spike. Well, welcome to Face to Face. We are joined by another special guest here from the Toronto International Film Festival. We have Bianca Stichter here today to talk about her new film, 3 Minutes, A Lengthening. Bianca, I can't tell you how thrilled I am to have you on the show today. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So, hey, before we actually talk about your film, which, by the way, I thought was absolutely brilliant, and it is another one of those films that I think everyone needs to see. Anyway, we'll talk about that in a second. Tell me, how has the film been received? I know it's played at a few festivals. You're in Toronto currently on your way out. How has the whole experience gone for you?
Well, it was a bit overwhelming, to be honest, because it's my first film, so I never did this before. So then all this festivals and interviews and so on is quite overwhelming, but also very enjoyable, because the reactions have been really, really good. So that makes me very proud and happy.
I bet it does. Well, that's great. Well, welcome to Toronto, and congratulations on a beautiful, poetic film. So what pushed you to direct a film? So you've produced a few pretty important films, from my understanding. Mm-hmm. So what got you to step sort of, in a sense, behind the camera, if you will?
Well, it was really because of in the Rotterdam, International Rotterdam Film Festival in the Netherlands. They started, I think, in 2015, way back when, they started a Critics' Choice program, that critics could choose a movie and then they asked them to make a video essay about that movie.
Okay.
And that was quite a new form then. Now, 5 years later, 6 years later, it's kind of like a bit more established. And I worked for a long time as a film critic in the Netherlands for a national newspaper. So they asked me as well, do you want to make a video essay? And I thought, oh, yeah, I don't know really what the film about, but I had this idea before to do something with the 3 minutes of found footage that I had seen on the website of the Holocaust Memorial Museum in Washington, because there was a book written about that called 3 Minutes in Poland. And I had watched the footage on that website, and it's 3 minutes, a little bit longer, but 3 and a bit minutes of a little town in Poland, not so far from Warsaw, with a large Jewish population.
Nieszczelsk,
yes. And you see almost like the whole town is coming out to be filmed, especially the children. And it made a very big impression on me. And immediately I had the feeling, it's so short, it's 3 minutes. Can't we make it in some way longer, that we give these people their due attention longer than for only these fleeting 3 minutes? So then I said to the Rotterdam Film Festival, well, could I do something with this material? And they were open-minded enough to say, okay, go ahead. And I contacted Glenn Kurtz, the writer of the book 3 Minutes in Poland. And he was also kind of like, who is this lady from Amsterdam? Let's see right. Where it goes, because I just sent him an email out of
sure, the sure, sure.
And then the Holocaust Museum was also kind enough to send me the material in a form that we could work with. And then we did a short presentation in Rotterdam. And then I already had the feeling I want to keep on working on it. And
you know,
then,
you know
here we are 5 years later.
Yeah. And here we are 5 years later. You know what's so great about that, Bianca, is I think for any new filmmaker, for anyone who has an idea that they feel intuitively is important, I think it's a real piece of support for them to go further, yeah. to go deeper, to ask the questions, to send the emails, right? Yes. And I mean, like yeah. you said, 5 years later and 3 minutes of film.
Yes.
It's absolutely brilliant. So talk a little bit about the film for me. So Glenn Kurtz, a family member who shot this footage.
Yeah, his grandfather was from Nieszczelsk, and he emigrated to the United States already in 1888. And he lived in Brooklyn and made his fortune there. And then he went with his wife and a few friends when he was like 55, he went to Europe on holiday, and they went to, you know, all the highlights, London, Paris, even Berlin. And they also visited the hometown, the town of the birth. So
this was 1938,
yes. And that, of course, gives a lot of tension to the material, because
of course
the people in it are looking very happy and joyous. And we, of course, know what from a year later started to happen with the first the invasion of Poland, and then the deportation and the extermination of in the camp Treblinka, in this case, mostly of almost all the people that you see in the film have not survived the Holocaust. So that gives, of course, an incredible tension to the material. And also because in that way, it even gives something like that I was doing something that especially the children, you see, because they really look at you. You have the feeling you can look them in the eye over the age divide.
It's, you know, I have to say, Bianca, it's remarkable how, and I so love how you end the film with a reflection on the face. And the humanity of the face, and yet the footage that David Kurtz took, even though maybe I read somewhere he was trying to sort of show the location, you just kept having these faces.
Yeah, because they really popping up to be seen for
yes.
That's maybe it's a kind of human impulse.
Sure, sure.
Still, you know, with Facebook and social media, everyone wants to be seen. But that was a thing that also back then. The effect that camera has on people is they want to be seen. So in a way, you have the feeling we're doing now something that the camera held as a promise already back then. You know, you look.
It's so camera. What a great phrase. The camera held a promise. It's so beautiful. Was it Helena Bonham Carter who said as the narrator that a film brings details without knowledge?
Yes. That's also that was well. when Glenn found the movie, he saw it down. He knew it must be in Poland, but where? And there's not a landmark like sure. like the Big Ben or the Eiffel Tower
sure.
if yep. they could establish where it was. And he thought, oh, that must be the town of my where my grandmother was born. And then he took a long time to find a survivor from that town, which was more on the Ukrainian border. And he showed it to that survivor, and he said, well, I don't know what this is, but this is not my town. So then it was still, you know, kind of, yeah, orphan of a movie, because no one knew where it was taken. And then they found... something's happening here. I don't see you anymore.
Oh, I'm still with you. Yeah.
Wait. Get something weird on the website. Yeah, here we are again. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
And then Clem found an old picture of the doors of the synagogue.
Right.
And then the synagogue is visible.
The Lion of Judah. The
Lion, and that's how he could identify for sure that the town was the town where his grandfather was born, Nashelsk.
Clearly Glenn's a bit of a detective, as you are as well, it seems to me. Mm-hmm. Like there's a real forensic like nature yeah. to not only the film, but you know, there's a forensic like nature to memory as well. Mm-hmm. And, mm-hmm. and you play with the film in such a interesting and beautiful way. It appeals to me kind of as a philosopher and academic, but it appeals to me too, I think, as a father who's trying to create memories for my own kids
yeah.
and for my family and so on. Did you, while you were going into this project, did you know that this was how it was going to play out? Or was this something that kind of was revealed to you as you dug deeper into the material?
Yes, the last thing, because let's say my first what I first wanted to do was to make it longer, but then of course you have to make it interesting to be longer, and that people don't keep their eyes on it and not get bored with it. So and then the second thing became, you know, you become a bit obsessed. You want to know everything. And of course, the most important thing you could know is who are these people. But that was because you have to realize that if almost everybody you know is murdered, there are also no people left to recognize you on a picture. So then I thought, okay, let's then see what all the other things that are in the frame, what are they? Are they important? Or you get a kind of, for me, it became in a way a bit absurd that you have a kind of, you know, a lot of things, but they are not that important, you know? Right.
They seem kind of
absurd way of
sure.
Gaining knowledge, but that is a bit of a, yeah. How can you phrase that? A bit of a... I can't find the English words. A decoy almost, like we can't know the really important things, so we're gonna feed all the other things that we can find.
Sure.
But even that actually was really hard sometimes, because for instance in the film you see people talk, they're clearly saying something,
right?
So I thought, okay, let's have lip readers look at it, and then we can see what they're saying, probably in Yiddish or maybe in Polish. And then finally we located a lip reader who knew those languages. But they said, no, it's too vague. We can't be sure what they're saying, and the fragments are too short, and the film is not clear enough. So that was an end to that avenue of research, let's say. But then I thought, okay, there are words that, you know, in every conversation, there are words you're sure that must have been said, like hello, and in this case, New sure. York, Nashelsk, and shop or food, that kind of word. So we put those words then in a part of the movie, so you could have a little bit of an idea. These words must have been have sounded at that time during this conversation. Someone must have said Nashelsk or New York or both.
Sure.
And they had that in all the languages that were spoken there, like Polish and Yiddish and English. So
can you, it's interesting that the color red comes up in a significant way. And I would love for you to talk a little bit about that, because it's also connected, I think, I'm pretty sure, I don't know this for sure, but connected to the film process itself.
Yeah.
And I think the film was discovered by Glenn a few months or maybe a year before that it would have completely disintegrated.
Exactly. Because
can you talk a bit about that? And
well, he found it in a closet in Florida, which is of course a very humid climate, so not sure. Hot and humid, not an ideal condition for film material to be in. And he donated it to the Holocaust Museum, and they managed to restore it. And they had said, well, if it was a month later, it would have been in such a bad state, we could really not do anything with it anymore. It was like a big blob glued together and melted into each other. So yeah, there was almost nothing to be done with it anymore. So I felt also it was important in one part of the movie, you see the really the film itself, the little images vertically aligned. So we know what we are actually looking at, because that's of course also a strange thing. Yes, film is something we look at, but it's also material, and it's something that you forget very soon, because it's something luminous. We look at what is recorded, but before computers, let's say in the analog world, it was really a thing, film.
Sure.
It's a material, and it's very in a sense for us it feels old-fashioned, because it's made from gelatin, from cattle, really. So that's that. I find so we're looking really at bones of cows while we're looking at a movie. Strange to realize.
The fact that Kodak makes an appearance in the film is just so interesting to me. And I'm old enough to remember the film canisters that my father. What was the only a movie camera can bring it back to you?
Right.
Part of the ad campaign. Yeah. Would you agree with that? Do we actually need the images? Do we need the images? I mean, this film is clearly, and honestly, Bianca, I want to chat about this, and I know we have a limited amount of time, but I think, you know, monuments and memorials, this film's a memorial, but the phrase faces as traces is just so, I will never forget that phrase.
Yeah.
And it makes me wonder about paying more attention to the people I love and to the people that I interact with and the faces that I see on my Zoom screen. And you know what I mean? It just, anyway, there's a lot of questions in there, and I wonder if you could unpack a little bit of that for me and my listeners.
Well, I think, for me, still, photography and film have a very different relationship to reality than paintings and statues, because, you know, painting, we think that Rembrandt is lifelike in his portrait, but who knows? We can't be sure, because we cannot see the person it was based on. There's not a photo of that person. So that intimate relationship with reality that photography has, yes, of course, you can also manipulate it and so on. But in first instance, it has a kind of a realistic relationship to the world around us. And especially if it's from a long time ago, because it exists now, 100, 150 years. And then especially in this case, because so much of it is in color, we tend to think that the world of yesterday is in black and white.
That's right.
Was also in color, and that makes it then makes it so close. It feels so close to you that almost those 80 years in between disappear. They feel like contemporaries, the people you see. So that was for me a very important part of the work, to show that. And of course, nowadays we have so many images around us all the time, more and more and more. So you could drown in a sea of images.
Hard to focus on anything.
Exactly. And what this film, what we wanted to do is, okay, see what only 3 minutes of footage can deliver when you really concentrate. There's so much only in such a short piece that can yield so much information that it's almost incredible.
Yeah, I love the fact that you are asking me as a viewer to be more present.
Mm-hmm.
To pay more attention to the details around me, to the wood carvings on the wall, to the shop signs on the street, and the red scarf, and so on. It's just it really is a remarkable film and story. And on one hand, strikes me as almost an essay, but a really important piece of documentary and even narrative filmmaking, because each one of these faces is represented by a story. And thank you so much for taking the time with me today, and congratulations again on the film, and safe travels back home. And I wish we had more time. I have so many more questions, but we've been talking with Bianca Stichter here about her new film, 3 minutes lengthening, and hopefully coming soon to a digital theater near you. Thanks so much for your time today, Bianca.
Thank you for having us.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.